Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Talked throughout publicly as though Caleb is the plan. Are you set on making him your quarterback now?
So, unfortunately, it's one of those things I think everyone's got to tune in on Thursday to watch and figure out. But I feel really good about our process and where we are and where we're headed. So, we know what we're going to do, but everyone's going to have to wait till Thursday.
Mike Cunningham has a better poker face than Ryan Poles. Yeah. The assistant GM has the better poker face, maybe because he didn't have to say anything, but he didn't flinch. Poles couldn't help but laugh.
I thought they were both laughing a little bit. A little bit. Listen, if you play a poker with either one of those guys, I like your chances. I mean, they know what's going to happen with Caleb Williams. They know Caleb Williams is the guy.
Yeah.
Somebody, I checked though, Mike, somebody on the Chicago Bears already has number 13. So Caleb had 13 at Oklahoma, he had 13 at USC. I think is his name Taylor Scott? I think Taylor Scott already wears number 13 for
Tyler Scott has 13, yeah.
Tyler Scott. Tyler Scott.
And Keenan Allen is the most accomplished number 13. I don't know what his number is going to end up being,
so,
you know, if he gets it from
So
Tyler
what we going
to
do
yeah.
here?
He got seniority, yeah. He got seniority.
Yeah. So, you know, if I'm Caleb, hey, you know, you can't. But Justin Fields is number one, right?
He was number one.
You don't
want
to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. So.
Maybe he does zero. Hey, look, maybe he goes to zero. Mariota, I think the first quarterback to wear zero. Maybe he goes to zero. Who knows? Whatever it is, it'll be a hot item in Chicago. That's for sure.
I know you've said many times that you love this time of year. It's like your favorite time on the sports calendar. And it's my favorite time, the actual draft, and most of the draft conversation I enjoy. But you know what? I think I've reached my limit. I think I've reached my limit. I've read one too many. I've read one too many articles, one too many studies from anonymous sources, unnamed GM, AFC executive, NFC
former
evaluator.
Scouts.
Yeah.
Former scouts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Former scouts.
A lot of that going on, too.
Coach, insider, somebody, my favorite one, someone familiar with fill in the blank, teams, thinking, all this stuff. So I like all this stuff. Okay. I know about loose hips and knee bends and good in space and can get to the first level, second level, third level. I've heard all the jargon, all the cliches. I'm good with that. But what I'm not going to do, Michael Smith, what I'm not going to do is sit here and listen anymore to any unnamed scout, one of whom talked to The Athletic. The Athletic, a scout says, I don't know Caleb Williams, but, you know, I'm concerned about his character. There are character concerns. Now, I don't know Caleb Williams. I'm concerned about his character. Over my head. What the hell are you talking about? You don't know him. You're concerned about his character. Another scout, and this is not why I'm upset. You're going to think this is why I'm upset, but it's not. It's just BS. Another scout says, hey, I like Marvin Harrison Jr., but I wonder if he has that dog in him. He doesn't appear to have that dog in him. What? What are we talking about? I just think at this time of year, right before the draft, we get to the height of bullshit. It's the height of it. So this time of year, last year, we heard
peak we bullshit heard, season.
Yeah, it is. We heard last year that C.J. Stroud wasn't that smart. And some mock drafts had C.J. Stroud down to number 9 or number 10. He's not that smart. He can't figure out. He can't process.
Will Levis was favored to go at number 2 this time last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Several years ago, not only did we hear Bill Polian, I'll never let you forget it, not only did we hear Bill Polian wanted to turn Lamar Jackson quarterback, very productive quarterback at Louisville, into a wide receiver, we also got leaks of Lamar Jackson's, I think, Wunderlic scores or whatever they were using at the time. They were very low, and we questioned his ability to process. And two MVPs later, before the age of 30, Lamar Jackson is doing his thing. Mike, this is the part I don't like. This is the part that I feel like there's some people in the league who either shouldn't have their jobs. They shouldn't have their jobs. They don't know how to deal with people. Mm-hmm. Or they've got too much time on their hands. They're bored. And maybe we should just start the draft. Maybe you should just silence yourself for a little bit. And then let the draft start, because this stuff is out of control. It's absurd. And the more questions you have about talented players, that lets me further know. Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably, no question, going to be like the best player in this draft. The more you question these guys who have had production in college, the more I know Caleb Williams is going to be fine. Caleb Williams is going to be fine. Just like Lamar Jackson has been fine, and C.J. Stroud has been more than fine. I just wonder what these guys are doing.
They got a lot of guys that won't be fine. There's a lot of guys that there aren't questions about who will flop. Like, we've talked about this before. In every walk of life, not just NFL evaluators and scouts and decision makers, but in every walk of life, there are plenty of people who are bad at their job. I think it was AT&T had this commercial where they had different, you know, whether it was a doctor or a lawyer that was just, you know, giving bad advice, like just okay is not okay. I think it was AT&T spot. Like, everybody who has a position is not good at that position, you know? And so just because these people have a title behind their name or formally held a title, and yes, they spend more time at it than the rest of us in theory, doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. And history proves
that. Yeah, what
are they
looking at?
There are going to be so many people that they're going to miss on first round all the way through. So many people that they're going to underrate who are going to hit late. So many people who are going to overrate that they're going to flop. And so nobody knows what they're talking about. We're just all passing the time. I mean, there's a void that has to be filled with something. There's a content void that has to be filled with something. And you're right, they're bored too. And they're picking up the phone and they're talking and they're just guessing. They're just throwing shit up against the wall and seeing what sticks. They got
agendas. How could you say, you know, in good conscience? How could you see? This is where, you know, people always hate on journalists. This is where you need to have some journalistic training. I'm talking about some good journalistic training. How could you say, in good conscience, I don't know him, but I have character concerns? That doesn't even make any sense. Right.
It seems like quite the contradiction.
So where are your concerns? He talked to one. Okay, so at the combine, he talked to a few teams. At the combine. But post-combine, he's talked to one team. He's visited with one team, the Chicago Bears. Caleb, I'm talking about. So unless the Bears are leaking to sabotage their own position,
which is
they're the only ones who have talked to Caleb Williams since he left USC. And so what you're doing in your high profile position, you spend more time than we do at it, but you're reading the same stuff that we read. You have character concerns because you what? Because you read NBCSports.com just like I do?
Social media? No. So what I was going to say, I thought she was saying that the reporters talked to one team. And what clicked for me there is like there's so much that's taken as gospel where it's like I talked to one member of a certain team. That person may be in a minority in his or her opinion within that team. Like they don't necessarily speak for the thinking of the entire team. Right. It's just one area scout. Well, that area scout, he might not be good, and nobody may listen to him within the building. It's just, but it's all just feeding the beast. And props to Ryan Poles, we played his side, getting the memo is like, hey, you're going to have to wait to find out. It's all about
Tune
the
in.
Show.
It's going to be a
I
great
do
show.
Want to focus on Caleb Williams, but I do want to focus on Caleb Williams because the idea that he doesn't care about football enough or that it's not important enough to him. This dude jumped in his mother's arms and cried. Now, there are a lot of people who were critical and remain critical of him. Okay?
I didn't love it. I just got to say, I didn't love that.
However you felt about it, I'm not even trying to discuss that. I'm saying however you felt about it, it's hard to marry that image with the idea that he doesn't care or that it's not important to him. If anything, it may be too important to him. Now, I have been critical, and Charles Robinson echoed this on Monday. It's like, hey, dude, like, you don't have to give oxygen to the gas bags on social media. Like, you don't have to respond to things that people say. You don't have to give it the time of day. You're Caleb Williams for crying out loud. But indulge me for a second. Let's see if this is what my mind was this morning. Because I was thinking about the fact that today is the last day BC in Chicago. The last day before Caleb. The Chicago Bears have not exercised the number one pick. They owned it last year and, of course, traded it away. They have not exercised the number one pick in the common draft era. The last time they had the number one pick was in the 1940s. We know the sad history of the position of quarterback in Chicago Bears history. You had a cup of coffee there. You probably lasted in Chicago as a columnist for the Chicago Tribune longer than most quarterbacks have in Chicago. And
I don't think so.
So you... you probably did. So. You definitely performed at a higher level than most of them have. And so, you know, we know how long it's been since they've had a good quarterback. We know how long it's been since they've had stability at quarterback. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer. Given what Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham have done this offseason, I'm going to go out on a limb and say very soon Chicago will have a 4,000-yard passer, maybe even this season. Okay. So, Chicago has never had a quarterback prospect like this kid coming to town in our lifetime, okay? So, tomorrow is going to be the beginning of a new era, the dawn of a new day, where there's going to be life pre-Caleb as we knew it in Chicago and life post-Caleb as we knew it in Chicago. I think he's going to be more than fine, Michael. I think he's going to be fantastic.
Me too.
He's been set up to succeed brilliantly. I think there's the prospect fatigue with Caleb Williams is real. Nobody a year ago, it's interesting, like even NFL players' careers have ebbs and flows. Not every season is Jim Brown. You know what I mean? Like you lead the league in rushing damn near every year. It's like you have some seasons going to be better than others. If Caleb Williams would have had his second to last season, sophomore season, this year, nobody would be saying the things that they're saying about him, given the fact that he had a little bit of a dip, relatively speaking, his last year at USC. And so I think the prospect fatigue with him is very real where and the time between him playing his last game and the draft process lends itself to so many nits being picked. I think he's going to be fantastic. Because the alternative is that he's the biggest bust in NFL history. And the reason I say that is I don't know of a guy that's going to go number one overall that's had this much promise and this much potential that didn't make it. Okay. What some would say that Jamarcus Russell is the biggest bust at quarterback in NFL history. For example, Jamarcus Russell was not this kid in college. You know,
Ryan Leaf was like a comet. He was like a comet.
Ryan Leaf was not this kid in college. So like, find me a guy that busted that was this good coming out. Certainly one that was this good coming out that went to a situation which on paper looks this good. But this is what I want you to indulge me with. If you'll give me the floor for a second.
Come on now.
I got this sign above my in my kitchen, on the wall. A lot of people have it. It's like a wooden plaque or whatever. It says Smith, established July 15, 2005, as in our family became a family July 15, 2005.
Great wedding. A great royal wedding. I won't say wedding. The other part.
Thank
it was
you.
A royal wedding.
I often think about, like, I don't remember life, going back to this BC theme. I don't remember life before. I don't remember July 14th, 2005. And before that, it's all a blur. Like, it's like as if my life really started July 15, 2005. But then I think about July 31st, 2012, when Maya was born. And I'm like, what was it like having two kids or one kid? Or what was I like before I had kids? It's like, it really, like our home really became complete July 31st, 2012. I say that to say, like, not only is this going to be a new day in Chicago, it's the beginning of a new union and a marriage. And I don't know what the stats are nowadays, but usually they say, what, 50% of marriages end in divorce? Likewise, half of these dudes don't pan out, right? Half of these guys don't pan out. But
I'll tell you this, though. Average marriage in the United States lasts 9 years. So if they can get 9 years, if Caleb Williams and the Bears can make it 9 years?
There you go.
Pretty good.
There you go.
Pretty good. Get to 10.
All right, so I'm about to land this plane. Like, Michael, where are you going with this? All right, it's made sense in my head this morning. Where are you going with this? It made sense in my head in the shower. Where are you going with this? Where I'm going is, it's like, talk about my wedding. We played Love Ballad by Jeffrey Osborne, right? My stepdad, Bobby J. He sang Love Ballad by Jeffrey Osborne. And there's a line in Love Ballad that says, what we have is much more than they can see. So, to your point, all that matters when it comes to Caleb Williams and this union that no man can put us under, this union between Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, is what the Chicago Bears think about Caleb Williams. Do they love Caleb Williams? Does Caleb Williams, despite people trying to object, people are trying to speak now, forever hold their peace about whether Caleb Williams should pull an Eli Manning and say, I don't want to play for the Chicago Bears. No, that's not happening. They are going through with this marriage. They will say, I do tomorrow. Like, no matter what anybody tries to say on the outside about who Caleb Williams is or who the Chicago Bears have been, as long as they come together and love each other and commit to each other. And frankly, who Caleb Williams is at 22 years old? Am I preaching? Is this good for somebody? Is this good for somebody right now?
I don't know who this is for.
Whoever Caleb Williams is, right? Well, whoever Caleb Williams is at 22 years old, God, I hope to God that he's not that person at 25. I hope he's not that person at 30. These two entities can grow up together. Ryan Poles, Ian Cunningham, maybe even Matt Eberflus, Shane Waldron, you know, whoever they take at number 9, DJ Moore, and now Caleb Williams, like, this is going to be the beginning of something beautiful. I believe it, because Chicago has suffered long enough. They've been in these streets long enough. They've been single long enough when it comes to a quarterback in Chicago. They've had the glory days for the Blackhawks. They've had the glory days for the Bulls. Hell, they've even had some glory days for the Cubs. The Bears, here and there, but it's been a long time. You know, a little bit, you know.
They broke the curse. They broke the curse.
Right.
The Billy Goat.
Right. We talk about Sid Luckman, but you know what? Like, you know, Jim McMahon had his moments. You know what I mean? Rex Grossman took it to a Super Bowl. But the quarterback position for so long has been such a source of frustration and disappointment and promise, and promises broken. Not anymore. This ends now. This is it. Caleb Williams,
I love it,
will end the quarterback carousel in Chicago. He will end the revolving door in Chicago. He will not only be successful, I believe he will be a star. So I don't care what any anonymous scouts say about him. I don't care what any anonymous sources say about him. I don't care what any people on the record say about him. What I do care about is that the Chicago Bears will make a statement about what they believe Caleb Williams to be when they take him first overall tomorrow. And after that, introducing Mr. and Mrs. Chicago Bears quarterback.
That's right.
That's it. That's it.
You
know, have a happy life. They will have a long and happy life together. I believe that, because I believe in this kid.
Established April 25th, 2024.
Yes.
Caleb and the Bears.
Wait, one more thing. And I'm going to give it to you on this, because you're going to like this one. The one I thought you were going to mention. Thanks for your time. Thanks for giving me the time. Mm-hmm. Pablo Torre had, I forgot who it was he had on. He had on a writer who quoted a scout as saying that Caleb Williams is like if Prince played quarterback. I'm like, is that supposed to be an insult?
Wait a minute. I heard. Yeah. I was like, oh damn, that's a compliment. He meant it as an insult.
It was meant as an insult. It was
okay.
Meant
first of all,
like
first of all,
with the painted fingernails and the personality.
Is like there's so much wrong.
There's so much wrong. Take it away. I knew you would love that.
With the comment. Yes. There's so much wrong with the comment. First of all, before I tell you, you don't understand football. I'm not gonna go there. You don't understand music. You don't understand Prince. You cannot put Prince in any kind of analogy as a negative. If Caleb Williams is Prince, he can't get ready. Work on the bus right now. You're going to have a gold jacket like you've never had
before. I'm about to say, David Fleming. It was David Fleming was all Pablo Torre finds out.
And he should be ashamed of himself.
He said, book on him. Now, this is a scout. To David Fleming. The book on him is he's just kind of a weird kid. One GM told me it's like if Prince played quarterback. They wish.
So what?
They wish. What? That level of genius? Oh, my. That level of creative genius at quarterback? Please.
So weird.
Thank
weird
you. As sign in, me up.
Weird as in I see things that other people don't see. Like, weird as in, I'm just going to come up with something that you'll be talking about years later. For example, one of my favorite Prince stories is, he used to buy houses in Minneapolis, St. Paul. He used to buy houses for people in the band. So that, in the same area. They all lived in the same area. He would buy houses. That seems like a very generous thing to do, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. But part of that expectation was, hey, if Prince rolls up in your driveway at 2 a.m. or 2:30 with an idea, you will have to indulge him. And so he let one of his musicians hear When Doves Cry. Just like, hey, I was working on this thing, When Doves Cry. And the musician said, yeah, but something's missing. Like, it doesn't have bass in it. He said, yeah, I put the bass in first. It didn't sound right, so I took it out. Oh, damn. Come on now. Like, most musicians ain't on that level. I put the bass in. It didn't sound right. I took it out, and it's still dope. Come on. If Caleb Williams is Prince, I'm getting this jersey. I don't know what number you're going to wear. I'm getting the jersey today. I'm getting it
I knew that
today.
Would excite you. I knew that would excite you.
That's my favorite quarterback. That's my quarterback right there.
That's my favorite anonymous scout quote. This instantly became because I'm like, what you meant for my harm was meant for my good, because that is the ultimate compliment.
Please
call me the prince of anything. Like, if you're like, oh, thank you, by all means. But honestly, in all seriousness, and I it was meant as a
what
as
you
a criticism.
Meant for evil. God,
it was meant as a criticism, but it is really like a dream come true for the Chicago Bears, okay? And it's also somebody that just, yeah, you're right, like, don't ever invoke Prince in a negative context
whatsoever.
Yeah, you
don't know Prince. You don't know football.
But in all seriousness.
To your point earlier, everybody shouldn't have a position.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't have in all seriousness, I think what it illustrates is a generational divide. Now, the word generational gets thrown around a lot of times when it comes to draft prospects. Generational prospect. It's like, shit, we ain't got that many generations to have all these generational prospects. Having said that, I'm going to use generational in a different context.
Yeah,
so we talked about it.
How many generations? Right.
I mean, like, we're running out of that's not how it works, you know? It's like getting a generational prospect every year. That's what I'm saying. Like, every year is another generational prospect. Right. But so we were talking about this with how he handled the combine and how Marvin Harrison just handled the entire process, even though his rationale was different. I mean, his dad was training him, you know, prepare for the season or what have you. But we're talking about how he's just new dudes. And I think you got a lot of old dudes talking about new dudes. Like, you got a lot of old school, old head scouts who culturally, you know, in terms of just their background, their perspective, their worldview, that just don't understand these new dudes. And I think that's
who was the dude to talk about Prince. I just got to know the Prince Scout. I'm so angry.
You still on
I'm
that?
I'm so angry.
You ain't
hear
nothing. You ain't hearing nothing I'm saying right now. You got Doug's cry. You got with Doug's cry in your head right now. I'm just being like, about how dare you? How dare you use Prince as an insult?
I'm so mad. I'm so mad right now. But you know, you're right though. That. You're right. It is.
Yeah.
It is people who.
Right. And then,
you're right.
It's just a different day and age.
Don't really understand.
Whether it's NIL, whether it's social media. Look, I sat there, and even I, as an old dude, damn near 45 years old, I'm like, I said it 5 minutes ago. I said it several. Like, stay off social media. Stay off social media. It's all they know. It's all they know. So you're talking about his pink phone. It's like, you know, like he had his phone in his hand because it's all he knows. They practically come out the womb with the phone in their hand. You know, it's like it's all these kids know. They dress different. They carry themselves differently. You know, they got money now coming into the league. This dude got more money than anybody maybe ever has come into the league.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just different. And when you have people evaluating them from a character standpoint, they are bound to be wrong because they just don't understand.
They don't understand
these players. And yet they're old and just not the game in some respects has passed them by. Like they're basically evaluating people who are young enough to be their children in many respects.
And
not across the board. There are a lot of young scouts who will subscribe to these old school
lines of thinking. But I was going to mention
that.
I was going to mention that though. No. Because some of the young scouts, they're biologically young, but they get NFL culture is so far behind. So to fit in, these biologically young guys start thinking like the old guys, and they're kind of outliers among people their age, among their peers. They don't understand their peers either. They spend so much time in these NFL facilities, in these buildings, and this is what we do. Well, football is important to them, and football is important to them in 1985. It looks a certain way. In 2000, it looked a certain way. They don't understand social media. They don't understand the obsession with the phone. Now, look, Michael, I know you've seen this. We've talked about it with our sons. Your son, Mason, is he 15? About to be 16.
Try to hold him back. To be 16.
So Robinson is 15 too. So my son's 15. Yeah. Your son's 15. I know you've seen this. One, the value that they place on the phone. I mean, the phone is holy. Okay. If you want to get their attention, I can yell all day long. I could have great points. No. I'm not heard until I take the phone away. Until I take that phone away, and then I get their attention. But you've seen this socially. I've seen this several times. We're like, hey, I want to hang out with my friends. Okay, great. Hang out with them. Hey, what are you going to do? Can they come to the house? Oh, sure. I prefer they come to the house so I can kind of monitor the situation. I want to see what y'all up to. I have seen this where a group of, and it's not just 15-year-olds. There it is. I've seen a group of 22-year-olds.
Right.
They're hanging out. Everybody, they're hanging out together and they're all on their phone.
Yes.
That's the hangout.
Yes. Yes.
So,
like
if you don't understand that, if you can't really get into that world, then you're going to miss some things. You're going to say, well, he's concerned about social media. He's concerned about this. He's not concerned about football. You know, yes, he is. He is concerned. He's passionate about football. But their social understanding, their interactions are different than ours. And you probably miss something great if you're just caught up on what it's supposed to look like. I know this. When Caleb Williams gets on the field, I haven't seen anybody like him in this class. And probably in a few years. Just, I'm not talking about he's the best. I'm talking about the skill set. The skill set of being able to throw, being able to run, being able to improvise, being able to process and command what's happening. I haven't seen that skill set, that package coming out of college football in the last 5 or 6 years. I'm not going to say 20 years, but the last 5 or 6 years. It's special.
Well, the Bears ain't seen it since who? When the last time the Bears seen it?
Luckman.
So I think they got one. I think they got one. I think they got one.
Oh, by the way,
I that made sense. Yeah,
can I tell you? It did.
Yeah.
I told you this before, Bobby J. You mentioned that Jeffrey Osborne pulled me aside in New Orleans. Bobby J. Hey, Michael, let me tell you something, man. There's some things Jeffrey Osborne can do that I can't do. But there's some things I can do that Jeffrey Osborne can't. Bobby J, shout out.
I'm not going to argue. Said
I can
argue.
Do some things that
I'm not gonna argue.
Jeffrey Osborne.
I would put our first dance wedding song. I'd take the Pepsi Challenge any day of the week with anybody else's first dance wedding song in the history of weddings. That went hard. Okay, that went hard. I watch that video every anniversary. And I'm like, you know what? He did that. He definitely did that.
And give
what
give
we
Bobby
have
J,
is much more than they can see.
Hey, give Bobby J props in the chapel where Martin Luther King Jr. once preached, Marsh Chapel, Boston University.
Yep.
Bobby J belted out "On the Wings of Love," a cappella, I believe. So
yeah.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Yep.
Give him some love. You lose three times in the first round Clippers. And we know historically.
I'm not accepting the slander. I will not hold on. You will not
hold
say
on.
This. I will not accept Luka's slander.
I do not fear a Luka Doncic-led team because I need to see something else. I just think I think he's fun to watch. But I need some fear in my heart. Do I think he's the best player in the league?
Like there's no more discussion about MVP. That's for the regular season. Like it's over. Now we're talking about this a different animal, different beast, different game. You cannot take what you see in the playoffs and apply it to the MVP conversation. That case is closed.
I don't
pencils down on MVP.
How about that? I don't fear him. I don't.
You're very premature. You're very premature in proclaiming Luka to be a choke artist, which is really what you're saying. You don't need to fear Luka. You don't need to fear Luka. In the immortal words of Tupac Shakur, a.k.a. Bishop, in that classic piece of American cinema, Juice, I'm the one you need to be worried about. You need to be worried about getting this smoke from me, okay? Like, how dare you? I'm so sick and tired of trying to save you from yourself. I can't believe you had the audacity, the nerve, to sit here and go at Luka, who now has 19 30-point games in 30 career playoff games. Did you know that?
Is that right?
Last night was his 30-point game
how
in the playoffs?
Series?
Like
how many series?
No. You said enough.
How many series?
You said enough. No, you said enough. I can't. Like the dude. What were you thinking? Like honestly, what were you thinking? I need you to say more. I need you to say. Forget what I gotta say. I shouldn't have to say anything. Luka's work last night spoke for itself. I shouldn't have to say shit. What were you thinking?
You
the one need to be explaining yourself.
You know what? Luka is brilliant in game twos, in game fives.
Stop it. Stop it.
You know, game sixes. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. All right, so those 19, 30-point games. No, I'm asking a question. Because I know they haven't been able to scale the Clipper Mountain. We know that. They can't get past the Clippers. You know, the Pistons had to get past the Lakers. The Pistons had to get past the Celtics.
There you go with this.
No, the Bulls had to get by the Pistons.
You
but
can't
the Mavericks
do that.
Got to get by the Clippers.
You can't do that. You can't
get to the next level.
You can't say that he can't. You can't say that he can't beat the Clippers. And then when
I think it's cute,
you can't. You can't help who's in front of you. You can't say you can't beat the Clippers. You can't criticize him 2 days ago for you can't beat the Clippers. I know the series ain't over yet. Same as I told you. And then when he comes back and he goes off of 32, and I ain't even got to the other end of the floor yet, you can't say, well, it's just the Clippers. You can't discredit it because it's just the Clippers.
I'm not saying it's just the Clippers.
Which is what you're going to do.
I'm hating on him.
You're going to do that.
I'm hating on him by saying he can't get by them. And I'm going to tell you, get your next, in case you missed it, ready, because I can come back. I saw Juice, too. It's out there. You ain't the only one who saw Juice. You ain't the only one who can quote Tupac. So get your next, in case you missed it, ready, because I'm going to give you something right now. The Clippers will win this series, and Luka again, and the Mavericks again will fail to get by the Clippers.
I'm gonna tell you the way in which they won't win this series: testing Luka on defense. Because I mentioned the 30-point games and 19 30-point games, and you seem shocked.
Slow down.
You seem shocked.
Oh, okay, slow down.
Okay. Here's a number for you. Listen, I'm just giving you the facts, presented without comment. Presented without comment, okay? It is literally being presented with comment. Yeah, sorry. Anyway, with Luka as the primary defender last night, Clippers were 2-for-17, okay? Lock down Luka. Lock down this entire series. Don't test Luka.
Keep his name out your mouth.
Don't catch the vapors.
Okay.
Which part? Lock down Luka? Yes.
Lock down Luka. That's nice.
Don't come for Luka unless he sends for you. You don't test him. Keep his name out your mouth, okay?
All right.
Like, enough with the Luka slander.
That won't be a problem. That won't be a problem.
And don't catch the vapors. Like I said, don't catch the vapors when he wins this series. And don't sit up here talking about, well, it's just the Clippers. Let me see what you do in the second round. Beat the Clippers. Big deal.
Next time I see you, don't worry. We won't be talking about Luka. His name will be out of my mouth, and his team will be out of the playoffs. Next time I see you, he gonna be done.
No, It's actually the opposite. You're gonna have to come up with new material and new ways to contort yourself into criticizing Luka, because it's gonna be Mavericks Nuggets in the Western Conference Final.
Okay. Right.
That works, right? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
It could work. It could work based on the bracket, but based on reality, no. So they lost. They lost to the Clippers. They lost to the Clippers a couple years ago. They've lost to the Clippers twice. It's going to be three times. You know, I wonder, can they build their team? Maybe they need to find somebody who can stop the Clippers. Like, we're going to build our team so we can defeat them. Because, like, we got everything else, but we just don't match up well with them. So this is a team building exercise for Dallas. How, you know, give somebody an assignment. Give the front office an assignment. I'm going to give you a few weeks to figure out how we can, you know, bolster our franchise so we are ready to deal with the challenges that the Clippers present to us.
Like I said, they'll make it to the, you got plenty of time to talk about, the Dallas Mavericks, because settle in. Wasted enough time of Kurt Heelan's. Kurt was at this game. Pro Basketball Talks, Kurt Heelan. Kurt, what's up, man? Can you please talk some sense? Nice shirt, as always. Can you please
Shariq
talk some
Abdul
sense?
Raheem. Shout
into
out
to Michael Holly. When it comes, you were at the game last night. Thanks for waking up early for us. When it comes to the Luka Doncic as well as the Dallas Mavericks and their chances of not only getting past the Clippers, scaling the mountain that is the Clippers, but going deep into these Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, I was coming on here. I was like going to make fun of Michael Hawley's wannabe Masters look today. And instead, I think I don't even have to, because did you watch the game last night? The Clippers.
I don't think so.
Here's the thing. The Clippers, honestly, won pretty much every category except they didn't have Luka Doncic. Like, that was the absolute difference. They got to the free throw. Their offense, their free throw rate was higher. Their offensive rebounding was higher. Their fast break points were higher. Just on and on down the line, except Dallas's defense is good. Luka's defense was just really good last night. I don't know if he's going to quite keep up that 2-for-17 level, but Luka can play defense, got in the way of guys, even without Gafford. Lively's having a good game inside. Their defense was quality, and Luka Doncic is the best player in this series. And unless Kawhi Leonard or, I doubt James Harden, but unless somebody over there can become the best player in this series, it's going to be Dallas. It is going to be Dallas, and I think they're going to run away with it. I don't think getting Kawhi back is enough.
Okay, hold. Here's a question from the Amen Corner. If you like my master's look, got a question for you. Okay, Kurt and great shirt, really. Like, you know, Big Country Reeves, Sharif, Antonio Daniels. You know, the Vancouver Grizzlies. We love them Vancouver Grizzlies. All right. Wasn't Luka the best player in the series when they played the Clippers the first time and the second time?
Why you keep bringing up old shit? Why do you keep bringing up old shit?
Hey, Luka's the best player in the series. That's not new. He's always been the best player in the series, but they haven't won the series. So what's changed? Kurt, tell me what's changed.
Dallas' defense. Since March, since they got Gafford, who only played, I think, 10 minutes last night, and I don't know what was wrong. I'm just going to say I saw him holding his back when he left the game the first time, like grabbing his lower back, and he played only 10 minutes. So whatever is going on there. Even without him, they were not a good defensive team before. They are a good team with Lively, and frankly, Kleba played pretty well in the role last night with Derek Jones Jr. out on the wing. Luka played better defense, but they've just got defenders and shooters around him. This is a better team to capitalize off what Luka does. And they got the split on the road. Now they go home. I think the Clippers are in a lot of trouble in this series.
Thank you, Kurt.
I just put it up on NBC Sports. You can go find my takeaways from last night, but that was at the top of the list. Kawhi Leonard's back, and it's not going to be enough.
By the way, Kurt, let me just mention. You live on the West Coast, live on the East Coast. No, I didn't watch that game last night.
That's why you're here.
What are you talking about? Did you watch the game last night? No. I was in bed.
And I ain't ashamed of it.
I spent a little time in Hawaii, and I kept thinking, like on a quick vacation during the season, I was like, man, I should just move out here, man. The games start at 10 in the morning, end at like 6 at night. Like, I could still go out afterwards. The timeline is just much better, except for the whole going to games thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you. All right, so speaking of defense, the Timberwolves, that's their calling card. And Anthony Edwards tried to told us, as we find to say, about one Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
This guy right here is calling the games for the Suns, like he just mentioned. He's happy because they got Durant. You're trying to compete against them. Which, you're laughing now. Were you laughing when the trade made?
Yeah. You know, I'm a competitor, man. I feel like I'm just as good as any one of those guys that got traded. So, and I feel like I can guard any one of them. So, you know, they got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels, you know, who can guard him.
Yeah, he can guard.
Yeah, so we not, you know, we here for it, man.
Prophetic words from last year from Anthony Edwards, and last night I call it the Jaden McDaniels game. What is your read on this series? The Timberwolves seem to have the Suns in their clenched jaws. This series in a vice grip. Can the Suns escape it and make it interesting, or are the Timberwolves just too young, too good, too feisty, and really just too tough for this Phoenix Suns group?
First off, I don't want to take anything away from the Timberwolves, right? Like, that defense is phenomenal. It's not just Jaden McDaniels. They are long and athletic. Rudy Gobert, defensive player of the year, to be here in the next couple of days, backing the whole thing up. They're elite on that end. But, guys, Phoenix isn't good, Sounds and they good. Are in real trouble. Aren't they?
They look like, washed. They look
they
washed.
Are just – you know what they need? And, again, I wrote about this morning. Don't they need a point guard? Don't they, frankly, need Mike Conley? Like, somebody who can come down, calm them down, organize the offense, pick out the mismatch. set it up, get some guys off screens, and start putting the ball in the right place. Because when things got rough in that game, Conley just, all right, let's slow this down. We're going to play this way. This is how we're going to handle it. And he had a few like pick and rolls with Gobert, which worked really well. I mean, they have some chemistry going back to Utah. And whenever the Suns are great front runners, right? Like when things are going well, man, they're clicking and the ball's flying and they're knocking down shots and they got all these isolation scores. But the first test of adversity, they can't handle the defensive pressure. They don't have a point guard who handles the defensive pressure. And the first sign of adversity, guys, those guys just fold.
Yeah. Now, that's the game. That was in my timeline. Okay, I was watching that game. That's my game. But I did see, Kurt, a few times, exactly what you're saying. Like, Devin Booker had a couple of turnovers. We was trying to make something happen. He turned it over. Kevin Durant trying to make things happen and pick up the scoring. Bradley Beal, as that third guy, looks like he's still trying to find himself as, you know, used to being a primary scorer. So, yeah, they got their problems. But I do want to ask you about McDaniel some more. Because I watched him last night. He was just so calm going right at Durant. I know Durant had two fouls early, so he was trying to take advantage of it. But beyond that, this kid is just like defensively and offensively, he's unbothered. How far can he – what's his ceiling and what do you think the ceiling is of the Minnesota Timberwolves?
I think all-star for him. Look, he's already on my all-defensive team. He's already top 12, top 10 defender in the league, one of the better perimeter defenders. So he's got it on that end. It's consistency and that kind of confidence offensively. But, like, I didn't expect that offensive game out of him. Did you guys? Like,
no.
I did not see that coming. And if he can do even part of that consistently, suddenly he becomes a key cog. And, like, look, offensively, they've got a lot of weapons. It starts with Anthony Edwards, right? But they've got Towns, and they've got guys, Conley, like you said, had points last night. If you can have nights like this from Jaden McDaniels, I don't know how you defend this team. And suddenly, I've been talking about Dallas and some other teams in this mix, but are they the second best team in the West? Assuming it's Denver and then everybody's trying to catch Denver. Are they the second best team?
Could be. I don't know if that's a stretch, but I've already called my shot with Dallas, so I can't contradict myself in one segment, or at least more than once in one segment. But you mentioned the word front running. let's go to Milwaukee and Indiana. So I'm guilty of it, and I'm gonna call Tyrese Halliburton on it, right? So after game one, I was feeling real good about myself. Feeling real good about my man Dame and his ability to, shoulder the load without Giannis. Now I'm freaking out with the freak out. Now that Michael's Indiana Pacers have evened the series, and now they're going to Indiana. Now here's the Halliburton front running part. In whatever voice he chooses to say it in, which is a whole other conversation, he just like it basically was just calling out Bucks fans, and being like, oh, you know what? This ain't shit. Like, we got better fans at home in the regular season than I've heard the last 2 weeks. It's like, you probably going to have to go back there, bro. So yeah. I don't know if that was the wisest commentary. Timing was convenient, but, I don't know if the commentary was the wisest, given that they're going to have to go back there before it's all said and done. Just what's your take on that series? And is it too soon to call it? I mean, the series, as Pat Riley would say, is really just getting started. But what's your read on that without Giannis for the moment?
Without Giannis, they can't stop Pascal Siakam. He is actually the leading.
Oh, my God. He looked like Giannis.
Yeah. Dame is actually second in the playoffs in scoring. And by the way, what is he doing at halftime? Is like he's having these brilliant first halves. And then, like, is he having a couple, like, heavy IPAs or something at half? And he's not the same guy in the second half. I'm not sure what's going on. Siakam. Unless they just don't have anybody who can match up with him. If Giannis isn't back, they don't have a defender who can match up with Pascal Siakam. And that should give Pacers fans a lot of hope, right? Like, I don't know how you beat them if he's going off and you're getting Miles Turner to have some good games. And I don't even know if we've had the best Halliburton game yet. Like, Indiana's a tough matchup for the Bucks anyway because of their pace. And if...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they miss, obviously they miss Giannis's offense, but like, if they don't get him back defensively and in front of Pascal Siakam, I think they're, Michael Hawley might be celebrating this one.
Well, let me ask you, Kurt, because like through two games, okay, we've had, essentially there was a blowout by Milwaukee in game one. Then there was a blowout by Indiana in game two. Game was close and Indiana just pulled it away in the end. So what do we have? A series tied at one, going back to Indy. Like, how do you call it? We know what the advantage Milwaukee has. They got Dame, especially first half Dame. And then you just mentioned Siakam. If you call this best of five series, who do you give it to?
Who's I kind of like the way things are trending for Indiana. I just think that, like I said, I mean, they won the regular season series. I like their matchup when they get out and run like they did in game two. And I think they figured some stuff out. And now they go home. They go home in front of that crowd with a young and inexperienced team and role players who will thrive off of that home cooking, that loud crowd, you know, in a way they look, young teams do, right? Like, I know Denver's going to be fine in Los Angeles come Thursday night. They're veterans. They're going to be golden. But how is Indiana going to react on the road? They got the split, and now they go home. And if it's, again, it's, I think it's a Friday, Sunday between those two, so really close. If Giannis can't play in those, and I'm not, there's no sign that he's going to be back. If he can't play in those, it could be 3-1 going back to Milwaukee, and then the Bucks are in a world of hurt.
Yeah, and then that crowd will, you know, hopefully have its say, if you're a Bucks fan, you know, and shut Tyrese Halliburton up.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So, listen, yesterday, a lot of talk, or Tuesday, I should say, a lot of talk about what happened Monday night in both those games, or in two of those games, when it comes to the officiating. Because the last time I think we talked to you, Kurt, we were talking about officials swallowing whistles in the regular season and what that would potentially foreshadow for the playoffs. Well, now the Sixers have seen what that means, learning that the hard way. And obviously LeBron wasn't too happy about the officiating, especially on that drive for D'Angelo Russell. What's the conversation going on? Again, you were at Clippers Mavs. What's the conversation behind the scenes within league circles with your sources throughout the league about just the state of officiating right now in these playoffs? And how it's, you know, look, the Knicks are up 2-0. I mean, we could talk about the Knicks and how good they are, but that should be a 1-1 series if officiated properly. And I've said this for years. The last two-minute report ain't worth the paper it's printed on. Like, that is such a waste of time because it absolutely does nothing. It's transparency without accountability. It's a waste. All it does is confirm we already saw, which is that there were several fouls and a timeout that should have been granted. Having said all that, what's going to be the fallout? What's the aftershock of what happened on Monday night?
Honestly, I'm not sure that there will be much. I mean, guys swallow their whistles a little bit in the playoffs anyway. And by the way, have we set the playoff record already for players looking at their coaches right after a play and going, hey, I need a review.
Feels like it.
Where to God, every play right now, man. I don't know that you're going to see much change like during the playoffs. There was a lot of talk about the missed calls, but a lot of that also turned to, hey, man, why didn't you call a timeout? Why didn't Kyle Lowry call a timeout on the baseline? All the for all the bad calls, there were plenty of mistakes by the 76ers in that stretch.
And the Lakers had a 20-point lead.
Exactly. So, both of those teams, of those teams blew fourth-quarter lead, big double-digit fourth-quarter leads, like or big leads like that. That's kind of what it turned to. Like, you've got to take care of your own business, because if you look, just talking to people last night, they're kind of like, from teams, we're just kind of like, if you leave it in the officials' hands, you get what you get, man.
But still, I mean, but Mike's right. I mean, the series should be 1-1. You're up by five.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, Brunson gets the bouncing three-pointer, you know, great shot. But at that point, how do you miss him? There were several fouls in that corner. The guy got beat up. Like, worse things happen on New York subways. It happened to Tyrese Maxey. They're in the corner. I mean, they grabbed his jersey. How do you miss that as an official? That is a win that was taken away from them. So that's the thing that bothers me. I'm less upset with the Lakers in Denver because you had a 20-point lead. That's your problem. If you're Philadelphia, the officials should help you out in that situation because you know New York has to foul. They foul. And yet the officials didn't call it.
Yeah, and standing right there, I don't know. Like, the tug on the jersey was absolutely a foul, but guys kind of, I feel like you see it in the NFL too, man. If you're a veteran who knows how to time the pull on the quarterback, who knows how to pull that receiver's jersey at just the right time, you kind of don't get the call. But Maxey got mugged, man. Maxey got absolutely just, they manhandled him once he kind of got in that corner with the ball and nothing. And I don't know how you don't get that call. And I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, my question is, like, I just don't know how they fix it. I don't know what they – that was actually a pretty veteran officiating crew. Guys get swept up in the moment in those loud – like, in a New York venue, in a loud arena, and the refs say they don't. And there are certain guys who – Joey Crawford loved to piss off the home arena like nobody else, but, like – I don't know.
But he was miserable anyway.
I don't know, man.
He was
just
miserable. Yeah, Joey was. But let me ask you this. Now, I'm not saying great players haven't, because most of the greats have complained to officials. You know, you think about Michael Jordan, you know, chewing that gum, screaming in an official's face when a call, you know, Kobe, same thing. But can you think of a great player, who has complained publicly, press conference-wise, about officiating more than LeBron James. I don't remember, like, Magic, Michael, Kobe, Bert, I just don't remember anybody going all in like LeBron with no, and I wonder what the purpose is. And by the way, before you answer, I just want to point out, LeBron has fouled out of how many games in his career? Like, what, or two? I don't
Under
know.
Two, yeah.
Like, you can count on one that, hand. You can definitely
LeBron
count on one hand.
LeBron has benefited from bad officiating more than anybody in the NBA. So it's just ironic to hear him talking about it ad nauseum. Can you think of anybody like this, Kurt, at his position, who's complained about officiating as much as he has?
No, I think he might be, in terms of especially like doing it, there's a lot of guys, Luka and we talked about earlier, a lot of guys who do it on the court, right? But like, once you've calmed down in the press conference, they all kind of step back, and LeBron doesn't. Like he, like you said, he, you know, whatever, $25,000 fine. He shrugs it off and keeps going. He does do that a lot, but I feel like he, and I'm wondering if it's a situational thing right now with these Lakers where he doesn't think Darvin Ham's going to do it. And this is like a tradition oldest time, right? Phil Jackson used to work the officials through the media, and I don't know, maybe Red Auerbach did. That's Michael, that might be during your time. It's a little before mine, but like
I mine too, bro.
I mean, it's a long-standing tradition of official ref of coaches kind of willing to take the fine to put something in the official's head before the next game in the series. Except I'm not sure that's what Darvin Ham does, and so LeBron's like, I'll take that up. I'll do it this series. I'll see if I can get us some calls next game, especially now coming home. they know they need to get them. They know they need to sweep these two at home, or they're in trouble. And frankly, they're probably in trouble anyway. They are in trouble. It's just they know the task in front of them, and they know they need a couple of calls to get there.
Hey, I don't want you to get in trouble. I know you got to run and I believe take your daughter to school. I want to get y'all with this. Yeah, real quick. I want to go back to Knicks Sixers, because as much as the Sixers were robbed, we all agree they were robbed at the end of that game. I do really love this Knicks team. I like them a lot. And I wonder, you know, in the West, this, you know, Denver feels inevitable. Certainly in the East, Boston has felt inevitable really all season. It's like, do the Knicks have something for Boston? Like you talked about, could Minnesota be that second best team that could maybe push Denver? You asked that earlier. Is in the East, is that the Knicks for Boston?
I think so. Look, I'll be honest. I thought it was going to be Philadelphia, but Joel Embiid, guys, is he there? He's trying.
He was scoring.
Yeah, no, but if it's not them, then it is the Knicks. And I think what the problem the Knicks would give Boston is unbelievably talented, right? And plays well off of each other. And Joe Mazzulla's, it took a while to get his confidence, but now he's one of the better coaches in the league. They're just pushing all the right buttons. But they tend to play, they can be a little bit cool. They can be a little bit too cool for school at moments. And that's not the Knicks. I mean, what won the Knicks, when we talk about that last 27 seconds of that game, the Knicks played harder, way harder.
Hartenstein's
flying in, grabbing rebounds. Hart's in the mix. They're helping box out to get Hartenstein that rebound that kicks out to DiVincenzo. They are getting to the loose balls. Josh Hart's ripping it away from Maxey. Like, for all the fouls and all the craziness, they played harder. And would that throw the Celtics off a little? Like, I just getting in that venue, getting in that moment, I could see the Celtics. I wouldn't pick them to lose the series, but like, I could see them getting thrown off.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. I do. I know you got to go, but I said to somebody last night, the Miami Heat, who really, talent wise, do not match up with the Celtics, are a good sparring partner for the Celtics, because they bring defensive principles and effort that the Celtics will see down the road. It's like a sparring partner who can't knock you out but can prepare you for the real heavyweight fight that you got coming up. So you're right. And the Knicks are that heavyweight. Yeah, they got a little grind in them and a little grit. And if you're not ready for that, you'll go home.
Yeah, you know the Knicks are going to bring it. Hey, anytime,
thank you,
guys.
Kurt. Like, we were talking about kids, man. It's like, you know how sometimes kids, you could say the same, somebody else could say the same thing, and they listen, but they just kind of tune you out. I think Michael has heard me talk too much. He just tunes me out. So it doesn't matter if the Dallas Mavericks come back in the fourth quarter. It doesn't matter what Luka Doncic does. It's like, he got to hear from you. So maybe hearing it from you will help
me
and my cause. I appreciate
it. I'll tell you both. I don't mind saying it.
I'm always here for you, man. I'm always here for you, man.
Hey, I'm rooting against the Mavericks. I need them to lose.
But you got to stay up for the game. You got to stay up for the game.
I need them to lose.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Think
series.
All right, on the eve before the draft, I want to go back to something you said, Michael, on Monday. I was feeling it when you said it on Monday when we were talking to Charles Robinson, but I'm feeling it even more the closer we get to the draft. It does feel like some wild shit about to pop off with the second and third pick. We talked a lot about what's going to happen at one. We all, everybody, you know, the mystery is pretty much over. It's if it ever was a mystery, it's Caleb Williams at one. You know, still no clear determination as to what the Commanders will do. It seems like it's going to be Jaden Daniels. But again, as we mentioned, this time last year, we were like, oh, the Texans going to take Will Levis with the second overall pick in a draft, right? You know, and so Will Levis ended up going in the second round. It took C.J. Stroud and the rest is history. So we think we know, but we just don't know, to quote Jim Mora, Sr. And then at number three, who the hell knows? Maybe you do, because again, I don't pay attention. I don't pay attention to everything everybody says.
Okay.
I don't watch anybody else's stuff. I talk to you, and that's it. I don't watch other shows.
Cool.
But
I like.
I read. That's about it. But the reason I say that is, you talked on Monday about the Patriots and basically a lot of cooks in the kitchen in this post Bill Belichick age. And then all of a sudden, I start seeing these reports. Again, maybe they were out there before, but I heard it first from you about Jonathan Kraft's involvement alongside Elliott Wolf. And, of course, a new head coach in Jerod Mayo. So I'm like, wait a second. That sounds like what my man was talking about on Monday. Yeah. Now all y'all just playing catch up, man. That's what it sounds like to
me.
So what the hell are the Patriots doing at number three? what the hell are the Patriots doing at number three?
You need to talk to people.
You need to make some phone calls. Got to call some people. No, but I know you well enough to know you're not just saying stuff, especially when it comes to that team. You're not just saying stuff just to say it. I knew there was some truth in there, and you were doing it in your more subtle way. But like, do they stay? Do they trade out? Do they take Drake May? Or do they take whoever the Commanders don't take? I mean, it just. Do they know what they're doing? Who's calling the shots? Okay. Take it away.
There you go. See, Mike, that's the problem. How can I say this? This is a football story, but this is more than football. This is a story, and see if you can relate to this. I know you can. You've seen a lot. When you have an organization and you've got a bunch of people at the same time trying to prove themselves, it's often a disaster.
This is Shakespearean, what you're describing.
Yeah, everybody at the same time is trying to prove themselves. And so it's not like you don't have, you want to say to somebody, sit down, settle down. Okay, just relax. But nobody can relax because everybody's trying to prove themselves. Everybody has an agenda and you don't always know what it is, but they got an agenda. And it just makes the whole situation unstable. So that's what you have at number two, and you got at number three. At number two, you've got Josh Harris, who is trying to prove that he's not Daniel Snyder. So that's happening. You know, hey, I'm not the other guy. So I'm sure a lot of people have noticed Josh Harris. Hey, what did Daniel do? I'll do the opposite. Now that starts off in the beginning. That's cool. But after a while, you're like, dude, what do you want to do? Because Daniel Snyder just had a messed up personality. He probably did a couple of things. It's the right intention. You should do it, but just don't have the personality that Daniel Snyder. Don't bring the same energy that Daniel Snyder brought to it. Everything he attempted to do wasn't wrong. He was just the wrong person doing it. And so they got all these people. They got Adam Peters, who knows what he's doing, but he's a first-time GM. You got a first-time owner in Josh Harris. You got a coach, Dan Quinn, who's trying to prove that, hey, in my second job, my second time around, I can get this right. So it's a mess. And then with the Patriots, you got all these rookies, and you got Jonathan Kraft, who for 30 years has been in the shadow of his father, Robert Kraft, but... No, Robert's in his 80s now, and Jonathan has kind of, you know, he's always behind the scenes. He's been very influential behind the scenes.
But
now I think he's taking more of a position of authority, and it's just a mess. So He wants it. I think he knows they need a quarterback. But as much as they hated on Belichick, and they did in the end, they hated on Belichick, he finds himself fascinated with this Belichickian, hey, I can trade back, pick up some extra capital, and still get a quarterback. And so they're
this
all
is Kraft
over
doing
the
this?
Place.
So this yes. is Jonathan doing this? This is not this is not Jonathan. The football people. This is not Elliot Wolf. This is not Gerard Mayo.
Okay. Well, let me ask
this
you.
Is Jonathan driving the bus.
All right, you know Jonathan Kraft. You spent some time with Jonathan mm-hmm. Kraft. Let me just ask you. What you know of Jonathan Kraft? He is a guy, very smart guy, very accomplished business-wise, very accomplished academically. Harvard Business School, all that good stuff. So he's got a first-year general manager who's not even a general manager. So Elliot Wolf. Mm-hmm. He's got a first-year head coach in Gerard Mayo. And he's got the most important, the highest draft pick his franchise has ever had since they've been owning the team. They've never picked third. The highest they've ever been is fourth. Mm-hmm. You think
McGinnis,
Jonathan
right?
Kraft?
Was that Willie yeah. McGinnis, right?
That was Willie yeah. McGinnis. Yeah. You think Jonathan Kraft's going to turn that over to a guy who doesn't even have a position? Doesn't have a title? No.
Yeah.
No, he's
well,
not.
Well, and I'll say this. Should he? Like, even going back to Josh Harris, I don't have a problem with the owner being interested in decision-making. I have a problem with the owner being overly involved in decision-making. Because it's like, if you're setting meetings with prospective quarterbacks based on your schedule, or you're sitting in on meetings and you are putting your thumb on the scale, hi, David Tepper, of like which quarterback you prefer, that's going to be a huge part of the decision-making process for the people who, in theory, the talented people that you hired, and you should let them do their job. They are not going to, you know, they're going to exercise some level of self-preservation. And they're not going to say, hey, you know what? I know you really like Drake May, but we're taking Jaden Daniels, knowing that if it doesn't work out, you're going to blame us. Like, what you think they're going to do if you're in the meetings and you're saying, I like Drake May? What you think they're going to do? You know, because you're not being deferential. Being interested in the process is one thing. But that's Washington, and they have an Adam Peters. Okay, they have a Dan Quinn. They got guys who, like you, Michael Holly.
Who've been there before.
It's not their first rodeo.
That's right.
Whereas in New England, the point you just made is what I'm picking up on, of like, do I really think Jonathan Kraft is going to turn it over to a guy without a position? Probably not, and nor should he. Because dare I say, despite the revolving door that's existed in Washington at the quarterback position, not only is this the highest draft pick the Patriots ever had, it's probably the most important, because it's like, you're right, they got more at stake. Everything you just described, to me, they have more at stake. Like, the Commanders are trying to prove themselves for different reasons. Like, but Adam Peters ain't auditioning for a job. You know,
right.
Dan Quinn has already
contract.
Had a job, been in the Super Bowl, been fired. I mean, you know, he's got the job, been a high level coordinator. Josh Harris ain't selling the team like this. It's like, if Jonathan Kraft is trying to say, okay, my turn, I'm the eldest boy, you know, and Elliot Wolf is auditioning for a job, Gerard Mayo is just like, you know, a rookie head coach. It's like, This pick, whatever they do with it, whoever they select, or whether they move down, it could be its pivotal moment as they've had in their ownership tenure. And we know what they've done in the previous 25 years or so, you know, 30 years.
This is where I
can understand why Jonathan Kraft, in this instance, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm not talking about both sides of my mouth. You got to let people do their job.
No,
but
you're
if you're Jonathan Kraft, you're like, hey, man, like, this pick is too important for me to totally sit this one out. So I do understand
from that
perspective.
I agree with you. That makes a lot of sense. I agree with that. I think where Kraft and associates may be going wrong is, and this is what happens when you're spoiled. They're so spoiled. Like, if you watch the Dynasty, you think about the Dynasty after the fact. Like, y'all complain. What the hell are you complaining about? What you mad at Bill for? You got six championships.
Made them a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean,
made them a lot of money.
Franchise, Your franchise value soared. They initially invested back in the day.
It's always been about credit.
Yeah, yep. Right. That's what it is. When they paid, they overpaid for the Patriots in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. They overpaid with $175 million. $175 million. And now they're like one of the top five franchises in the world. So, and you got six Super Bowl titles. And they're upset. And Robert Kraft goes on camera and says, yeah, you know, I credit him with the Super Bowl loss. Oh, the Super Bowl loss. You know, you mean of the nine y'all went to with Belichick? You mad? You mad that he didn't get the one over Philly, the Malcolm Butler one? Okay. Yeah. So if he had played Malcolm Butler, y'all would have had seven? Like, okay. Yeah. So they're spoiled. They're spoiled. And I think that that is driving Jonathan's decision-making, because what he should do is sit there and take Drake. But the reason they don't like Drake May, or the reason they're hesitating on Drake May, is because it'd take 2 years for him to be great. Mm. 2 years. And they want to be good faster than that. So they might take a higher floor quarterback who won't be as good in 3 years and pass on somebody who's not as good now,
so you,
but might
you
be
think
great.
They take McCarthy? You think they take McCarthy?
I think they want to take somebody who makes it. So McCarthy, Penix, I think they want somebody who gives them more of a chance to compete faster without dealing with the with the ups and downs of a guy who needs some
cleaning
up.
They don't
want
to start Jacoby.
But has
they don't
all want to
start
tools.
Jacoby Brissett for a season. Yeah. Or they don't want to redshirt a guy. But that might be the best thing to happen to Drake May, because we talked a lot about earlier in the conversation, earlier in the show, we talked a lot about Caleb Williams. And I believe that Caleb Williams will make it, even though history tells us that we're going to look back in a couple of years and all these dudes everybody can't go. All these dudes ain't going to make it. They're not going to hit.
Yes, that's right.
I think Caleb Williams, despite Chicago's history, I think Caleb Williams will hit. So what about everybody else? If I'm a betting man, based on everything you're saying, Michael, I'm probably betting on the guys that go to Washington, New England, no disrespect, not wishing it on y'all, to not hit, just because of the situation they're walking into. So if I'm Drake May, when I go to bed tonight, I'm praying, you know, I'm like, Father God, thank you for this
Kevin
blessing.
O'Connell.
But your will, not my will, thy will, not my will. But if you don't mind, let the Vikings trade up to three, please.
That's
so
right.
I could go to that situation. You know, like, we've seen it before. Sometimes the later, the better. Like, yeah, you get more money early on, but the later, the better for these quarterbacks. And if I'm Drake May, I'm hoping that I end up in Minnesota reunited with my old quarterback coach and Josh McCown. Because the other thing, too, is it's like, and this is a thing. It's like, you go to a team with a defensive-minded head coach, if you win. And this is something to be mindful for with Houston. We love D'Amico Ryans. But Bobby Slowick ain't long for that situation in Houston. Not to say that C.J. Stroud can't, you know, work with another coach and be just successful. We both are big believers in C.J. Stroud, obviously. But it's like, when you got a defensive coach like a Matt Eberflus, like a Dan Quinn, I don't know if Cliff Kingsbury will get another head coaching job, or at least in the NFL, or like a Gerard Mayo, it's like, well, if you do have success, what does that mean, you know, for your offensive coordinator moving forward? Not just that, it's like, if your head coach is a defensive coach, what's the relationship like? I like to think that that's probably more overstated, however, because we just talked about Belichick. Belichick and Brady got along fine. Dungy and Manning got along fine. Chuck Noll and Terry Bradshaw, well, they didn't always get along, but they were successful. Don Shula, Dan Marino, you know, I can go on and on about defensive coaches who have won a lot of games. So it's actually kind of counterintuitive. But nonetheless, go into a situation where you got a coach with an offensive background who's going to be there, more important, like Kevin O'Connell will be, is far more attractive if I'm Drake May, or for that matter, Jaden Daniels or anybody else.
Yeah, Drake May, it's funny you said, hey, not my will, but your will be done. But if you are considering my will, I just want to say.
Right.
How about, Sean Payton, Kevin O'Connell, that could work for me. We're good with that.
So, last thing I want to hit with you today, some news that happened today. and it's connected to the draft, because I would never forget how much fun I had covering the 2006 NFL draft. The intrigue at the top of that draft. But even as a New Orleanian, and I've said a million times that, you know, I stopped being a Saints fan. I've told that story a million times. I stopped being a Saints fan in my teenage years, but I will forever root for the city. And I just knew what it meant for New Orleans to get Reggie Bush with the second overall pick in the 2006 NFL draft. I mean, it was like, such a national star. To descend upon New Orleans. He brought such instant credibility and juice to that franchise in a way that few, if any, had before. You know, I mean, obviously some great players had gone through New Orleans before, but Reggie Bush was such a rock star coming from, you know, this powerhouse at USC and winning the Heisman Trophy. Well, speaking of that Heisman Trophy, he's got it back at long last. He has his Heisman Trophy back. The Heisman Trust, recognizing the sea change in college sports and college football in particular, has finally decided to return the Heisman Trophy that had been vacated because Reggie Bush received what at the time were considered improper benefits, which to you and me, they were never improper, because we all knew the type of money that Reggie Bush was making for Pete Carroll, for USC. Who was it? Was it John Hart was the AD at the time? Not John Hart. I'm sorry. I'm getting old myself.
No. I don't know who John
Pat,
Hart
it was Pat Hayden. It was Pat Hayden.
Hayden. Okay.
Pat Hayden. Yeah. Right. I think he was AD at the time. Anyway, don't quote me on that. Anyway, point being, Reggie Bush was making a fraction of the money on the side, whatever improper benefits he was getting, a fraction of what he was making for that university, for college sports in general. So it's like, it's about time that he got what was rightfully his and what he earned back. But never too late to do the right thing, like I like to say. And it took him long enough, but the Heisman Trust is doing the right thing. It took enough noise. There was so many people clamoring for this for so long.
That's it.
They finally did right about this situation.
And that's what stands out to me, Michael, what you just said. Like, so many people speaking out and speaking up about the situation. I think it put pressure on the Heisman Trust, especially when you have people saying, hey, no, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to show up because until Reggie Bush gets back what is rightfully his, that Heisman Trophy. It's just a different world now. I mean, you mentioned earlier, to come full circle, you mentioned, you know, the sign in your kitchen, Smith, established 2005. And you don't remember what life was like before then. It's hard to remember what college football was like before, you know, the last few years, and the things that upset us, and the outrages that we had, and the, you know, oh,
tell
my goodness, we can't have this. And now we look back on it and we say, oh, what's the big deal in this world where college athletes, not just in football, but, you know, Caitlin Clark making $3 million at Iowa, you know, so many deals where Quinn Ewers went to Ohio State, got $1 million, didn't play there. Then he leaves Ohio State and goes to Texas, gets more NIL money. Like, there are NIL deals all over college football and college sports. So for Reggie Bush to get a deal where he has these, he has some improper benefits, it seems.
But it was never improper. Like, it's from, for us,
it seems
we,
like it's from
we a, knew we right. knew then. We knew then it wasn't improper.
It like, seems like
know,
it's from a different
Cam
century.
Same with Cam Newton and that controversy. It does.
Doesn't it seem like it's from a different century?
Reggie, it
enjoy
does.
It. Enjoy the trophy that you earned the first time and that you have gotten back. Never should have been taken away from you. I'm glad. This is a good decision.
Speaking of enjoy, it also just gives you an excuse to go down the Reggie Bush rabbit hole and just, like, go look at some highlights from Reggie Bush at USC. It's like you want to, like, here's what you should do. Read up about the situation if you don't know all about it, or, you know, the reaction to it and Reggie's comments and whatnot. But also just, like, do yourself a favor and tune into some highlights and go on YouTube or social media and find some of the highlight reels. That dude was so cold with it at USC.
Oh, he was.
He was so cold. And he was unreal.
I got another lesson for people before we get out of here. Another lesson. Just a quick lesson. You know, don't follow the crowd. Even if the crowd says, if everybody, you know, everybody is saying this, don't be distracted by what the crowd says is the right thing when you know something else to be true, or you feel it. You feel in your gut that you want to go in a different direction. This is a lesson for draft time. This is a lesson for career changes. This is a lesson for following your convictions. If you know it to be true, if you want to do it, don't worry about what the crowd says. Because Michael Smith, once upon a time, was covering the NFL for ESPN. And everybody else said, Reggie Bush is going to be the number one pick, not the number two pick in the draft. He's going to be the number one pick going to the Houston Texans. And young Michael Smith, says, no, it's going to be, Reggie Bush is not going to be the number one pick. Who's my guy? Defensive end? Out of North Carolina State? Mario Williams. It's going to be Mario Williams. People said you were crazy. What are you talking about? You stuck with your convictions. Sure enough, number one pick, 2006 draft, Mario Williams. Number two, Reggie Bush. Follow your heart, Michael Smith.
Well,
follow your instincts.
And your reporting. Your real quick. Real quick.
So no, and the sources you have.
So again, this is age. I feel my age upon me. If Pat Hayden was the AD at USC who gave the replica of Reggie Bush's trophy back when he forfeited it in September 2010, that's why I had Pat Hayden on my brain. Okay, so okay. I just wanted to clean that up real quick. Okay, but thank you for bringing that up. Thank you for the props. That's why I've always struggled this time of year, just to bring the conversation full circle. That's why I've always struggled this time of year with talking about everybody lying, talking about everybody, talking about this being the peak bullshit season and how you can't believe anything people are saying. Man, I don't know that I was ever lied to by the people that I talked to. Now, they might not have telling me the whole, they might have told me the whole truth, or they may have, you know, withheld some things. But part of the reason I will, you know, I'm like, I don't care about damn being humble. Part of the reason I will take the Pepsi challenge when it comes to accuracy and credibility in my day when I covered the NFL draft is because I didn't associate with people who lied to me. Again, I didn't have every story. Certainly didn't have every story first. And they may not have told me exactly what was going on. But in terms of using me and misleading me and intentionally manipulating me, I can't say that I remember that. I can't say that I recall that, where I was like, I put out something around the draft in particular. I don't mean in general. I'm talking about the draft, where I put out something that was like, because I would have gone back to that person and been like, yo, you know what I mean? Like, what's up with
right,
that?
Yeah.
You know?
Why'd you set me up
and
like
so,
that? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So so the reason why the Mario Williams story hit was because I was talking to the people who were making the decisions and they were honest with me. You know? It was really as simple as that. So, yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that we see from these anonymous sources, some of it, honestly, I wonder, and I'm not pointing this at anybody in particular. I often wonder how much of the stuff that is reported is literally made up. Like, I wonder, because there's, who are these? Like, I spoke to a team source. Did you really? Like, do we ever go back and check whether or not who that team source is? Are we being liberal with the term team source?
Yes.
You know?
I think so. I think people are being very, very loose with it.
When it comes to opinions, a lot of people got opinions and we talked about it. But when it comes to like the facts around what's going to happen, I think what's also happened is there are so many more people reporting on the draft, really sports in general, but so many more people reporting on the draft. And therefore, the pool of sources has expanded. everybody can't have the same sources. Everybody does not have access to the sources at the highest level. So everybody who's reporting
everybody can't be an insider.
Every network, everybody can't be an insider. Yeah, it can't
it's
be.
Like quarterback.
Inside is crowded as hell. Mike, it's crowded inside.
It's like
some of y'all got to be outside.
Yeah, right.
The circle of trust is big.
You can't tell me. You can't tell me it's eight franchise quarterbacks in here. We ain't got enough insiders. We ain't got eight. It's room for three or four.
I reject that notion. I'm sorry. I'm rambling at this point than usual.
That's right.
I reject that notion that it's nothing but lies being told. I just think it's a lot of people who should not be, you know, calling themselves insiders and who take a lot of liberties when it comes to what they're reporting.
And you said more people
and who they consider to be sources.
You said more people
not all sources are credible.
No, they're not. More people are not reporting on it. More people are talking about it.
They're talking about
it. But they're not
reporting. Posting about it.
Yeah.
Correct. They're posting about it. They're talking about
it. So that's the issue.
And maybe they are talking to people, but who are the people you're talking to? And is their perspective good enough to be taken as gospel? So anyway, our time's up. This time on Friday, we'll be talking about actual draft picks. We made it.
Oh,
we're
you
here.
Said Friday.
One more sleep. One more sleep until the draft. Yes, I'll be here. We'll do this on Friday.
I smoked you out, huh? You'll be here on Friday.
I may have to do it from the road. I'm going to be on the road.
That's fine.
I may not be doing it from the comfort of my own home with my monitor, but yeah.
As long as we're talking about the draft, we'll be talking about the first round. The first round. Keep that in mind, too.
It's more than one round. It's more than one round. Let's preemptively keep not us for anybody who needs it, not just you, for anybody. Right. Like, don't give me. I don't want to see no grades after round one.
No grades. Round one.
Everybody's grade is incomplete after round one. Everybody gets an incomplete.
And round one will be good intel as I do my own research for my own draft. I'm working on my own draft.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.